Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. In a second, I'm going to be joined by Pete, and he and I are going to recap the Lakers' loss. We start by talking about Alex Caruso. The conversation after the game has been all about him only playing 16 minutes and what could amount to being a finals preview. So we react to that and then discuss whether or not we think he should start getting more minutes and where they would come from. In the second segment, we discussed Philly in particular, because I think that's a team that the Lakers might face again come the finals or a team that they might run into in games that matter later in the year. But Pete seems to be a little lower on them. So we discussed that in the second segment. And then in the third segment, we noticed that Dennis Schroeder looked significantly better against Philly in ways that might be very meaningful moving forward. So some optimism on that front. And we discuss from there, you know, more Alex Caruso minutes. It's a lot of Alex Caruso minutes talk. So you guys will enjoy that. Pete is significantly more optimistic after this win or this loss than I was. But we'll see. We'll see what side you guys fall on. All right, joined now by Pete Zayas. Pete, this you and I both come from coaching backgrounds, and the Lakers, obviously, they led with seconds left in the game, so they obviously had a chance to win it, and I know the point of this is always to win. Is it weird I would have been a little annoyed at them winning that game?
Like they wouldn't have deserved it?
Yeah, like there was too many mistakes all over the court and off the court on the sidelines and stuff that I would have said, like, there's a chance if they win that game, they don't learn enough of those lessons that they sometimes you need to lose. You need to burn your hand to realize that you probably shouldn't stick it on top of the oven or in the fireplace.
What are some of the mistakes that are eating at you?
I mean, this is where like the SpongeBob meme, right? Where the list just like
the unroll. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we have to start with Caruso's minutes, right? This has been a thing that we've been talking about. This is now the second game in a row where he doesn't come in until there are 8 minutes left in the first half. I just don't think the Lakers should go through any quarter in which he doesn't play at all. He's just too important a player, too productive a player. He makes basically everybody around him better every time he steps onto the court. And I know that, you know, they're trying all these things. And I know that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about the notion of this season. Like one of the major purposes of it is finding optimizations for a lot of the new guys. But I also think you have to, you need to optimize Caruso too. Like you need to find the various ways, all of the different players that he can help. And I don't think he's going to help anybody playing 16 minutes in a potential finals preview.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're coaching toward, right? Like to me, Alex starting game 6 of the finals told me all I needed to know about what Frank Vogel thinks about him. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are very much in that stage of the season, you know, just past the 25% marker where the incorporation of Schroeder, the incorporation of Wes Matthews, right? Guys that, you know, you look at the box score and say, okay, where could his minutes come from instead? Mm-hmm. Those two, KCP, are an option. You could even, you know, with going with that three-guard lineup that Vogel went to that's been very good defensively and almost won us that game. Mm-hmm. You could even, you know, cut into Kuz's minutes. It's an interesting dynamic for sure, because I think that you could make an argument that Alex Caruso is the third best player on this team, with apologies to KCP, right? Yeah. But when it comes down to it, when we need to win, Alex Caruso's in the game. And I trust me, man, you don't have to twist my arm too hard to want 25, 30 minutes of Alex. I also think that we saw some progress from Schroeder tonight, mm-hmm. That the fundamental challenge of this season is that you've kind of got this 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle that the job is for them to put it together over the course of the season. And so the one argument for Caruso playing the 16 minutes and the, you know, high teens. I'd love even if it were into the low 20s, is that, you know what you have in him, right? You know that this is a, this guy will supercharge your superstars. And so then it becomes a matter of how do you incorporate everybody else? That said, like you wouldn't have to twist my arm too hard, but I do think that everything and several of the mistakes in this game are things that are matchup dependent. Like where I'm at, you know, Anthony, I've been annoyed at this team plenty of times this season already. This isn't one of those nights for me. Like this was a schedule. This looked like a schedule loss to me a couple of weeks ago. I've been talking about this game. Now that can be true while at the same time, Philly being a bigger team and the some of the issues and some of the ways we handled that, some of which were good, some of which were bad. It's an informative game for sure. But I think there were environmental factors along with like if we're looking to play them in the finals, does Alex Crusoe play 16 minutes? No, it's an 8-man rotation. And Taylor Horton-Tucker probably plays zero, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's where I come from on this game. I thought this was going to be a double digit loss and it looked like it was going to be for a decent portion of it. And then Joel Embiid did a few pelvic thrusts and, you know, we almost, almost caught up to him, but Tobias Harris hit that shot over AC and here we are.
Here's a lineup. So if I was to ask you before the season, what would a good lineup look like with the personnel on this roster? Wouldn't one of those lineups look like Alex Caruso, KCP, Kyle Kuzma, LeBron, and Anthony Davis?
Sure, probably. Yeah.
How haven't they played it all together? That's crazy. They haven't been on the court at all this season together. And I think part of it is because Anthony clearly doesn't want to play the five, right? And even when he's out there as the biggest player on the court, you saw minutes where with him out there, Montrez was guarding Joel Embiid, you know? So like they're very conscientious about keeping AD fresh. So fine. But you know, what that means is there are quite a few looks that the Lakers have to be getting some data on that they haven't to this point. Right. And I don't know. I knew heading into the first quarter so of this season, it was going to be somewhat frustrating because it is a lot about gathering data, but it's still in a game like this that it was very clear that as soon as AD just like started trying even a little bit, right? They go on that 13-0 run and take a lead. And that's what it's been all year, right? When AD is fully engaged, the Lakers are far and away the best team in the NBA. It's just that we haven't gotten it. And while they're acquiescing to his desire not to play the five, when he has looked his best this year, it's been there. It's been at that spot and it's been surrounded by shooting and it's been with him having enough space and being utilized in pick and rolls and actually rolling to the rim on those pick and rolls. The screen that Schroeder set for him to release him for what could have been the game-winning basket, right? Like stuff like that, we just haven't seen very much of this year. And I don't know. Tonight felt like the Lakers the vibe that I felt from this one is that they're getting kind of cute. It's getting overly cute. I'm watching. Have you seen on Netflix this like glass blowing? Have you seen that glass blowing documentary?
I saw a preview for it, but yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's fascinating for one thing, and it looks awesome in 4K. But some every so often you'll see these artists, and this one guy in particular who's like far and away the most skilled person in this group. They were supposed to be doing cartoon characters, and he put together this thing where it's like a bunch of colored pencils bleeding, and the judges basically all but told him, dude, you got too cute. Where's the character here? You know? And I happen to watch that episode right after the Lakers played this one. And I'm like, the competitor in me watches this team that it felt like, and we're going to talk about here in the next segment, whether or not we see the Sixers as a finals preview. It felt like a potential finals preview that the Lakers still looked at as a Wednesday night in the NBA. And it's Well, it is, sure, but it's just tough for me as somebody who really looks forward to this kind of a game because of how well both these teams are playing, to just say like, oh yeah, I guess I wasn't supposed to care about this game. It's hard for me to separate those two things.
They cared about this game. It's like there's a difference between caring about the game and pulling out all the stops necessary to beat them. Like our Philly specific playbook is very different. There are no, if we're playing them in the finals, there are no Montrezl Harrell defending Joel Embiid possessions. Zero. Right. Unless we got some big lead and it's garbage time. Right. There's not a 16 minute Alex Crusoe night. There's not this much of a rotation. So that we're trying to keep everybody fresh. We're trying to incorporate new pieces, and we're going to have this kind of generic template that we go into every game with. And we're going to try to beat you with that. That was one thing that so much of the conversation this year has been around, like, oh, they didn't try very hard. They kind of coasted in this game. That wasn't the case in this game. And Philly's really good. And
that is, you know, we need to give them credit.
Yeah. But that's the thing is like AD didn't play particularly well. We play
again.
And we play 11 deep in the rotation. We don't do anything matchup specific. We shoot like crap. We shoot from the free throw line like crap. And we lose by one to the best team in the East.
Yeah. My last point on the Caruso specific front is we are trying to gather data. How long has he been a Laker, and how long have we wondered whether we could extend his minutes out and see him as a potential 25 to 30 minute type player, and if he can keep that energy up? And at some point, not just from like our data gathering standpoint, but also he's in a contract year, and at some point he and his agent are going to be interested in whether or not he can do that and trying to get himself a contract. And you combine my own annoyance because I'd like to see the guy play, because we've believed in this guy for so long, and we did see him play extremely well in the finals in the biggest game of last season. But we still don't know on a consistent basis if he can actually do that. When you extend his, he can play as hard as he does, going from 20 minutes to 25 to 30 minutes. And, you know, from just a organization building, the Lakers are going to have a decision to make on him too. It would be nice to have a little bit more information on that decision than, well, we saw it a couple times and maybe it might work out, but we'll see.
I think we know what player that we have. I mean, sure, maybe in a 25, 30 minute perspective, maybe that's something that we don't know. But like, I feel like we know what we have in AC, and that his incorporation is seamless. And when the games are important, the minutes will go up. But this was a Wednesday night in the NBA at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's hard for me to look at it that way, man. It's like with this matchup, with this, and we're going to talk about this here in a second, whether we see this as a finals preview, it's hard for me to look at it that way. Let's take a quick second, though. When we come back, we'll talk about Philly as a team that the Lakers might see come the NBA Finals. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today in a daily podcast, breaking down the biggest news stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. Today's show is also brought to you in part by betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% deposit bonus. Today's game of the day is going to be the Lakers. There are no lines or information on it up on it quite yet, as they await information on who all is going to be playing for the Lakers. But I would say, just like I talked about in the Sixers game, which, by the way, if you took their money line, you made money tonight. But the Sixers money line, that is. But if you the next one that I want to talk to you guys about is actually this Detroit game. I think the Lakers are going to be a little tired after a long, hard, close game. They aren't going to be as focused on the defensive end. They're playing against a team that isn't particularly good on the defensive end either. So I would go ahead and depending on what they set the over-under at, but I would say that the Lakers will pretty comfortably clear just about anything that they set it at, realistically speaking. So that's today's bet of the day. If you're going to do so at betonline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% deposit bonus. And if you are doing any gambling, please do so responsibly. I see Philadelphia as the team I don't want to see, like the team I least want to see in the finals, with how the Lakers are currently built, right? They do have an extra roster spot. We don't know if that's going to go to a bigger wing or if that's going to go to a rim protector type, if it's going to go to anybody at all, right? Because we already see that the rotation is pretty jumbled as it is. But would you meet me out on that island or on that limb, or do you think there's another team out there that makes you a little bit more nervous than Philly?
Yeah, Philly challenges some of our physicality, right? They're a really big team. It's not just Joel Embiid and Dwight Howard at five, but Ben Simmons is really big for his skill set. Mm-hmm. Tobias Harris has good size, and that was what they went to, right? When they needed Tybal. A puck at the end of the game, they exploited the size disadvantage, right? They knew we would switch, and they chose AC, which I thought was interesting over Schroeder, right? Mm-hmm. And AC defended it well. LeBron came over, but didn't get a hand up. Not that LeBron would have bothered the shot, and Harris shot over the top. They even got shooters like Korkmaz, Shake Milton's got good size. So they're just a big team overall. Mm-hmm. Danny Green, of course. And that's going to challenge us to some extent because we're not that big. But to me, I don't know. I don't think it would be that close of a series if the two teams played. I don't think they have a guy you can give the ball to on the perimeter that can really create a shot. And I think that as soon as we turned up the intensity at the end of that game, like we were rolling them. We just mm-hmm. waited too long to do that. And if we get one stop, we win that game to a degree where you would have been annoyed had we won that game. I don't think it's particularly close. Like I thought that how we double teamed Joel Embiid was kind of poor in the first quarter. In the first half, like we were a step slow, but when we were really locked in, that's the trick to beating them, right? Is keeping him on the perimeter, trapping him, doubling him, making him make passing decisions against our scrambling defense. And then when we needed a bucket, we dragged him out to the perimeter. We had Schroeder set a little wide pin down screen. AD curled it, easy bucket in the paint, mm-hmm. right? Like I just think against, if you're looking to do matchup specific stuff against Philly, I'm just not that bullish on them. I mean, we'll see. Maybe I eat my words, but I don't think they're that much of a
threat. So I mean, it sounds like there's a different team that you would rather not see over Philly. So like if the Lakers saw Philly in the finals, you'd be confident. So who would you be less confident against?
Brooklyn. I think they're going to make moves between now and then, right? Like I think their roster is in balance, but I feel like they have Kevin Durant. I feel like we forget that come playoff time, the guys that really eat and that really dominate, and KD is really, to me, the only guy in the NBA that can stand toe-to-toe with LeBron in a high-level series. Mm-hmm. And he's an alien, and he can make any shot that he wants to make. And that roster is currently imbalanced. They are atrocious in terms of interior defense and just defense in general. I don't know if they can get there, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if a buyout market guy or two decided to go there and made things real interesting. But at the end of the day, like, it really comes down to that, right? Because Philly's really good on defense. Mm-hmm. They're good on the interior. They've got size. They play with force. They get out in transition. Brooklyn's got two of those guys. I don't consider Harden in that category, but I've seen what Kyrie can do in the postseason too. Mm-hmm. Have two dudes that can score no matter what. And Philly has zero. And that's what it comes down to in a playoff series to me. So maybe that's an oversimplification, but I just don't think they have enough in terms of a go-to guy.
It might just be me being stubborn because I didn't like the way Harden is handling it. So I'm like not willing to give them credit. So sure. Like I'll cop to maybe that's like where I'm coming from, but I'm still, they are going to be a different team and they are going to have different pieces, but their best defender right now is probably Durant.
Sure.
And then
they've got a lot of work to do between now and then, man. Yeah. I'm not, by no means do I think that they're a sure thing. I'm just saying, knocking Kevin Durant out of the playoffs is a very difficult thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's nearly as difficult with Philly, even with all of the other aspects of the game where they're really good.
Yeah, I just look at Philly. I'll make the case for Philly because it's not that I disagree with your, like, your point is basically that Kevin Durant is really effing good at basketball.
And yes, I'm sorry. That's my hard-hitting analysis tonight.
There's no refuting that. I'm not disputing that at all. I just think from a team building, and this is where I'm going to sound like an NBA hipster, right? From a team building standpoint, I like Philly's identity more than I like Brooklyn's. Brooklyn's sure. is basically like, your turn, your turn, your turn. And now the guys taking turns are really effing good, especially the one dude, right? But I can also go your turn, your turn, your turn, making a defensive mistake that the Lakers could just take advantage of every time down the court, especially AD. The thing that makes me the nervous, especially given the way that he plays, is actually Joel Embiid's foul hunting ability. If he gets a couple quick fouls on Gasol, then you have to slide AD over to him and he gets a couple quick fouls on AD. Like, that's what Shaq would do. He would just wear down your front line and that would be it. Now, you could also do the same thing with Embiid and get him in foul trouble because he's one of the least mobile players in the NBA. But that's how you would really kind of even the score with the Lakers, right? Is if you get the right guys in foul trouble, then you're really kind of stuck and LeBron and AD becomes LeBron against Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And if you get, you know, enough of those games, maybe one or two games like that, you get another, like you get the Danny Green playoff game where he just lights you up for 8 or 9 3-pointers. You get the Seth Curry playoff game where he does the same thing. And now all of a sudden you're talking about the difference between one or two wins or losses one way or the other. That's what makes me nervous from what I've seen. Now, this is just super small sample size to this point. We're a quarter of the way through the season. I've been the most impressed by what I've seen from Philly than any of the other teams.
Yeah, I think Embiid, you just trap Embiid. That's what we would do in a 7-game series. So there is no, like, I mean, of course, Mark will get some one-on-one time with him, but in the other matchups or when you need to go to it, it comes down to, can Embiid keep up with the speed of our team, mm-hmm. right? You neutralize him as an individual scorer and make him make 4-on-3 reads against, or, you know, odd number reads against double teams. You drag him out to the perimeter with Anthony Davis on the other end, make him chase him off screens, make him defend the 3-point line. Hopefully AD makes jump shots again someday. And, you know, I don't know, man. I just think in a 7-game series and in a team-specific matchup, I actually think we're a very difficult. I would actually argue that this game, even though we lost it, is indicative of how much of a matchup issue we are for Philly. We talked about mm-hmm. us being able to handle their physicality. Them being able to handle our speed, especially defensively, when we are locked in. Like, this was not anywhere near the best version of the Lakers. Mm-mm. And the fact that it was the outcome that it was as close as it was. We're over 25% of the season too. We haven't gotten blown out once. We're the only team in the NBA that hasn't gotten blown out. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to, in this individual matchup, that version of the Lakers played a team that's great at home in Philly. It's best record in the East. To this degree speaks to the degree that I think that our speed is problematic for them. So We would see. It would be a fun finals for sure, but I don't think it's as close as other people think it would be.
Makes you feel a little better. Like, I think the other side of the coin that you're talking about is that, like, the Lakers made kind of an outlier run at the very end of the game and Philly kind of choked on themselves, which maybe the Lakers created. So I don't – Yeah, just
because
depends
we played Anthony Davis
on
at the five and Alex Caruso was on the court. And mm-hmm. we were like, hey, let's try to win this game in this last – little run, right? With our best lineup, as mm-hmm. opposed to that lineup that played that many minutes. We saw what a difficult time that Philly had with that. That lineup plays way more if we're trying to beat them in a series. Like, it's just we're not playing for today. None of these games are playing for that win that night. We're playing to incorporate as much as we can into this team. And sometimes the long-term goals don't always line up with the short-term ones.
Yeah, I think that's a perfectly fair way to look at it. All right, let's take a quick second again, and when we come back, we're going to lighten the mood here a little bit and look at some of the positives from the game, more of the positives from the game. Dennis Schroeder getting going in any way, shape, or form is a big deal. He even hit a three-pointer for the first time this road trip, which if he can get his feet under him, that makes a big difference to this Lakers team. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that and what it might mean, not just for him, but also this Dennis Schroeder, Alex Caruso conversation, which has been kind of brewing on social media as well. Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all sides of the story with the Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kosloff and Adam Stanko get personal while interviewing players, coaches, media members, all the people who make the NBA happen. Subscribe to the Rejecting the Screen podcast wherever you get podcasts. Today's show is brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Head on over to rockauto.com where you will visit a family business that has been doing this for over two decades now. And you are going to find the best collection of parts that you can possibly find on the internet. It is getting insane. The more high-tech these cars get, the more difficult it is to find the proper part. And that makes it all the easier for the big companies to mark up all of the parts that you might need should anything go wrong with your car. Well, rockauto.com is here to help you avoid all of those kinds of messes as best you can. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil. Your car needs carpet? They have that too. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specs, and prices you prefer. And most importantly, the prices you see are going to be the same for everybody, regardless of your driving background. So again, head on over to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and then write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com, use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you will save 20% off your next order. Not your first, your next. So however often you go to the website and you make a purchase, use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to save 20% off. And you're saving 20% off on an incredible product. We've been working with these guys forever now, and it is the kind of partnership you're really proud of, not just because of the ability that we've been able to work together, but also because of how great the product itself is and how easy it is to sell. I've told my family about it, close friends back home, friends that I've made out here. I personally use it almost every day, basically. I would probably say I'm closer to every day than anything else, any other way you could describe this thing. It's great for me because I'm always on the go, always have some errand to run or something to ride or something like that. Avery got into some kind of trash or something, so I have to clean up and don't have enough time to eat a full meal. Built Bar has been great with that. I've lost weight since we've started working with them because it's a super healthy bar. Great flavors, great textures, just an all-around fantastic product. So one more time, head on over to builtbar.com. Use that promo code LOCKEDON to save 20% off your next order. Builtbar.com, the best protein bar you'll ever eat. All right, we're a quarter of the way through here. We have probably seen Schroeder play his worst basketball, like sustained basketball of the season. I don't know if we're going to see him play much worse than we had leading into this game. We've also seen Caruso probably play some of the best basketball he might play this year, right? Especially shooting the basketball. I don't think he's going to be a 55% three-point shooter on the season. My question is, and it's tough to make a call or even give analysis given the disparity between those two facts that I just presented, but do you think now a quarter of the way through the season that the Lakers are or would be at their best with Schroeder starting or with Caruso starting?
I mean, the starters have been
they've been really good,
right? The numbers have dropped off a bit. I think we're in the high teens now in terms of net rating. But if they're not the best starting five in the NBA by net rating, they're close to it. I think that right now that the best starting five would be with Caruso. I do think that that is the case. I also think that that speaks to a degree of incorporation, that it's worth investing in Schroeder right now. And the second half was evidence as to why. Like, AC can't do all the things that Schroeder can do, particularly with the ball.
Yeah.
When we played, it was good to see Schroeder succeed in that second half against
absolutely
in particular, right? Because that he squared up Danny Green, blew by him three times. Squared up Ben Simmons, blew by him. Tobias Harris, same thing. He had a sixth one that I don't remember who it was against, and then hit that three as well as we were making our comeback, which was great to see. He's a guy who hits who in like clutch situations is always a very productive player. So that's something to consider as well. But right now, yeah, like AC knows how to play with LeBron and AD and God with Mark too. I do want to see that, right? Like I want to see that lineup. And that said, like the Schroeder's ability to use his speed is different than any other, not just player that we have on the team, but in that starting lineup, adds a dimension that no other player, like KCP does it, but can't do it with the ball in his hands. So like
look, when KCP does it, you're like, whoa.
Sure. Right. And it's not like, I've got a switch. Let me sauce this guy up. Right. And cross him up and drive to the basket. KCP's more doing more off ball work. So look, like I said, I would love to see Schroeder get some minutes with the starters and, you know, some of the times when
Caruso.
We close that second quarter and Mark comes back in, you know, maybe keep an AC in a little longer. But I would say with Schroeder, more of the puzzle that needs to be figured out isn't with the starters. It's with the groups with AD. And part of it is AD struggles, right? Like Schroeder's a guy that's so used to having the ball in his hands that I think he's still figuring out the mix on with the starters and with that second unit, but becomes a lot more important, that shot creation, when LeBron's on the bench and it's him and AD, or some of the minutes that he gets alongside LeBron without AD on the court, although those are more limited. So yeah, to me, it's more like getting more on the same page with AD and even Trez than it is a starting lineup issue.
I don't want to misspeak for you, so correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, but I think another version of saying that is that with Schroeder, it's too early to give up on the Schroeder in the like, for not give up, because give up would imply that they haven't been good,
sure,
right? But it's too early to even tweak it, because they might continue to get better. Like, they're in a dip right now, but they might rebound and actually be better than they were to start the year. Whereas I think a relatively sure bet is that we know that starting lineup with AC would probably be really, really good. Right. And there's even maybe some question as to whether or not Schroeder would even be better with that bench lineup, right? Because we've seen Caruso being more of a steady player. It might be actually beneficial there. I would like to at some point, like I kind of feel like, what's the line? Stop trying to make fetch happen. Fetch is never going to happen, you know, with that lineup with Keith and with Montrez out there.
But like, right. Yeah. The one with LeBron and all forwards lineup. Yeah.
Right. It's like, stop trying to make fetch happen. That lineup of fetch is never actually going to happen. I'd like to see Schroeder mixed in with those guys, like in one of those guys' spots.
I like that. I actually think that that's more of an adjustment that would be better for the team and for Schroeder, rather than adjusting the starting lineup.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think there's, it's like you said, it's this jigsaw puzzle. The difference with this and a jigsaw puzzle is that, like, there are multiple ways for that puzzle to come together. You know, this is more of like a, I don't even know what that would be. A song, maybe, you know,
sure.
where you could, you know, or an album where you could
different arrangements. Yeah.
Yeah, like a, yeah, a, an album where like, you know, a song could go up here versus over here, whatever, to tell your story. That's just kind of where I find myself. I don't know, man. I've reached this point with Caruso where it's also a selfish desire because we've talked this guy.
I totally get that. Yes.
You know, we've talked this guy up so much.
So fun, man. And he's so good, but he's also fun. Like watching him play basketball is
highly entertaining. Did you see the turn he made on Simmons? Yeah. Like, did you see that Simmons caught the ball? He was like it, like just slightly off center to the right. And he took a dribble to his right. Caruso turns him going there, spins him back to the middle, and then also cuts him off there and makes that layup really hard. And Simmons is like a wizard around the rim. He can use both hands and he looks super awkward there. Mm-hmm. Caruso's giving up like 6 inches in that play and it maybe more. And you're just seeing this and it's, you know, game in, game out. You can find a clip of him doing something like that. And if it isn't something like that, it's something to where he disrupts the entirety of the set that they're trying to run. And then he goes down on the other end. And what's been really fun to watch this year has been the strides he's made forward on that side, not just knocking down shots, but also making decisions, handling the pick and roll. His mid-range game has improved as well, which is kind of crazy given that he only had a couple months to really make any improvements to his game. So I don't know. I understand, and you and I have talked about this endlessly, that this is how the Lakers are going to approach this season. On the other hand, though, with new information in hand, I also feel like it wouldn't be the worst thing to reward somebody like Caruso for making the amount of taking the strides forward that he has.
Where do you take the minutes from?
I haven't really liked what I've seen from Markieff this year. There's just too many, like Harold is a version of Markieff that just doesn't shoot 3-pointers very well. You know, Kuzma, I think, can do a lot of the things that you're asking for from Markieff while not being as physical. So I would, you know, in that lineup of meh, can you extend Caruso's minutes or Schroeder's minutes to be a part of that lineup to where they have a guard out there who can actually kind of do some creation as well as whatever LeBron is trying to do. That's where I would grab them. Are you saying that you can't find somebody to take their minutes away?
No, I'm not. I'm actually just trying to talk through the problem because I think that question is a difficult one for Vogel to answer. It right? This is one that we've
especially politically.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of it too, right? With the like, oh, do you bench Schroeder? It's like, if you're pulling guys in and out of the starting lineup, like you risk some, which is not to say that, you know, Schroeder would throw some fit or anything like that. It's just like, when you do that, make sure you're doing that for a reason. You don't do that slowly without seriously understanding the dynamic there, right? Mm-hmm. Of what that could be. In terms of Keefe, would you play him at all? Because most of the time guys get a shift, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, let's play Keefe 6 minutes and you play him 2-3 minute shifts. And then he goes over to the bench. Like I didn't even break a sweat. So like if you were going to play a guy, 12 minutes is probably his floor of any player that's in your rotation. So to me, it's like a 12 minutes or 0 minutes type thing or 12 minutes or more type of thing. So is there value to you? Because one of the arguments is that trying to keep everybody engaged. We got 11 guys who can play. One of them is a kid who I think should be playing more in THT, and I want to see him making his mistakes. But then that compounds the problem on top of that too. So is there value in keeping Keefe getting 12 minutes a night, even though he's not playing particularly well? I agree with you on that. But just keeping him engaged for the long run rather than being, oh, we're going to trim our rotation down by one because this guy isn't playing well to start the season.
I think it's too early to do that, but we're also kind of nearing the point where you would, you know, like I would like to make that decision on Keefe before the All-Star break where I'm not even saying that like for sure we're benching the dude. I'm saying I would like to know one way or the other where we know, all right, is it worth it to continue to keep him engaged? Like, is this somebody who can actually help us here? Or is there too much overlap on the roster? If we do think that he's somebody that you keep playing, then cool. Like, we'll just keep that thing going. But I would like to, within the next maybe month or so, figure out, all right, one way or the other, is this guy getting his two shift per half or not? And, you know, it sucks because Keefe was such a big part of the finals run last year. And I'm sure he wouldn't enjoy it very much, that decision being made before the All-Star break. But I think you're also nearing the point where, like you're saying, we need to see more from Talen Horton-Tucker. Every time he's on the court, he just kind of flashes something. And he's the future, and he's somebody that the Lakers are going to have to make a decision on this year. And then also, again, like, you got to reward Caruso. And I think I hold both those guys in higher priority than I do Keith.
I do too. But I do think that there's that idea of keeping everybody engaged and everybody getting, you know, getting run. The part I disagree with you on is the timing. I think that doing that is an after the All-Star break type of thing. The All-Star break, I think, starts on March 3rd. Mm-hmm. So we're a little more than a month away from that. I think we're riding out this 10-11 guy thing until then, keeping everybody engaged. And at the very earliest, it's after the All-Star break where we may start to tighten things up. And even then, I wouldn't be surprised if we roll through most of the regular season, keeping everybody engaged. So, because remember how the playoff series went last season. And this is what Vogel is coaching for, is playoff success.
Yeah.
Even now, it's to get the team in a position to do that. Each series had its different personality. Portland was a pretty general one across the board, but like the guys who played versus Houston versus the guys who played versus Denver were different guys in a lot of the role players, right? And so making sure that you got like all 10, hopefully 11 dudes with THT by the time the playoffs come around that are all, you're not asking that guy who's barely played all season, like, shit, we need to go small and we need yeah. Keith.
The Bucks problem.
Winning lineup for Vogel, right?
Yeah.
And if he's, you know, collecting cobwebs at the end of the bench and you need that small lineup the way we did against the Rockets in mm-hmm. that series, or he had good minutes against Miami as well, and he hasn't played in barely at all in 2 months, you're putting him in a difficult position. So like, you're right about all of that. It's one of the bad parts, quote unquote, of having this much talent, and one of them good problems. And that's why I think that, to the detriment of a Caruso's minutes, like this is what our bench played tonight in terms of minutes: 13, mm-hmm. 15, 16, 20, 16, 7 with THT, because mm-hmm. Harrell was in foul trouble. But you see this really even minutes distribution where LeBron and AD are the only guys that are playing really, really big minutes. And I think you're going to see that continue. The guys that get more minutes are like, Schroeder is averaging 31 minutes per game. I think that's a good thing right now. I think that, like, mm-hmm. let him make his mistakes, get him incorporated, and then come playoffs, maybe there's a series where he's a 22 or 24 minute player. And that's more appropriate when we really need to win those games. But we will have as much of that data as we need that you were talking about earlier on Schroeder, where we've got years of that with Caruso and with some of the other guys.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, all of the guys, I mean, ironically, outside of Davis, have looked consistently engaged, right? Like, we haven't seen, like, today was actually the closest that I've seen Keith to have one of those like frustration fight kind of things, right? Where he uh-huh. got tangled up with Dwight. And actually, I kind of like seeing that, you mm-hmm. know, Dwight's in there. I think he had just elbowed Trez in the back of the head, and you saw the game get a little snippy, right? And it was nice that Keith kind of stepped in and said, no. This isn't going to be a one-sided affair. We can throw a couple punches too. So I enjoyed that. And I think that's where Keith has some value, as well as the shooting and as well as the mobility on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. I would agree that there's value in keeping him engaged beyond the All-Star break. I just think, I don't know. I'm a little nervous because of Harrell's presence on the roster. I think there's a little bit too much overlap there, where when those guys, because unless you're really making a change to, you know, having Gasol coming off of the bench, when you have Keith and Harrell out there together, there isn't enough size to take advantage of going small and athletic. You know, it's just kind of they're there. They're, but you have two tweeners where rather than taking advantage of quickness or ability to shoot on the perimeter. So I don't know. We'll see what that looks like. I would imagine the reality of the situation, the way it's actually going to play out, is a lot closer to what you're talking about than it is to me. There's no incentive right now for the Lakers to really rock the boat right now, even coming off of, you know, a loss like this. And if they lose a few in a row, then okay, maybe we're talking about something else. But as of right now, I wouldn't, if you're listening to this and you're hoping that any of the things that I'm talking about actually come to fruition, I wouldn't bet on it. I it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, same. And if it does, I think that All-Star, post-All-Star break is when it will.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. One more time, the Lakers lose to Philadelphia 107-106 in Philly. They snapped their, what was it, 8-game road winning streak, and now fall behind the Utah Jazz for worst or best record in the West. A record that I'm sure everybody is just losing all kinds of sleep about in the Lakers organization. We will be back tomorrow after the Lakers hopefully beat the Detroit Pistons. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's day.